Life is a journey. What's your story? Radio St. Pete Insider welcomes Carrie Kreisman, author of Accidental First Lady, now a speaker, author, and inspirer with an online memoir class that will debut May 20th. Welcome, Carrie.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit first about this wonderful book that you wrote and the journey to do so.
Accidental First Lady is my memoir of 22 years of political spouse life. As many who are listening may be aware, my husband was first elected to politics in 1999, which set off more than two decades of public service. And what that meant for me as the spouse behind the scenes and beside the elected official was navigating public life while we raised our kids, sustained our marriage, nurtured friendships, and dealt with what everyone in life inevitably deals with, which could be a health crisis, tragedy, and just general life, and the differences we did in the public eye. And about three quarters of the way into his political tenure, people started asking me, how do you do this? As in, how do you live this public life? And over coffee one day with a friend, I gave her the answer that I wouldn't necessarily give a stranger in public. So I gave her an honest answer. And she said, you should write a book. And that day, my book idea was born.
And we're so lucky it is. And for those of you who want to hear Carrie talk, she'll be at Bookstore One in Sarasota, Saturday, April 27th, 10 to 1 p.m. And her book is available everywhere that you buy a book, but we love to have you get it at Tombolo Books as well. Now you're on another journey, and this is a memoir, encouraging people to write memoirs, coaching them, and offering resources on your wonderful website. Tell us a little bit about this.
Well, I was fortunate and honored to teach memoir in person in 2022 and recently at Eckerd College. And I taught in 2022 with Keep St. Pete Lit, a wonderful local nonprofit that if you don't know about them, you should. And yes, I am plugging them because they do great work. But in teaching, I taught from the perspective of an average person who wants to tell their story. Look in any bookstore or online, and you'll see a lot of memoirs. Statistics say that 62% of Americans want to write memoirs, but a lot of times you see most of them from famous people, people with teams, people with large platforms. But the average person has a story to tell as well, and I truly believe there is value in our stories, and that while we don't all have to tell them, if we want to tell them, we should be inspired and encouraged to do so. So my teaching comes from that place that it is possible. There's a multitude of publishing paths that are right for some and not right for others, but everyone can who wants to can eventually find the one that works for them. And so I teach a framework of getting over that imposter syndrome and find the courage to bravely tell your story through memoir and share the publishing paths. And then after you're done writing, you're not done, because if you want to sell books to anyone besides your family and friends, you have to learn how to market yourself and be comfortable with putting yourself out there and talking about yourself. And I tell people how to do that.
And you call it memoir magic, but it's really hard work. And one of the things that I remember my mother saying is that your legacy, it's not just for your family, that there are lessons learned. And that a good memoir, what makes a good memoir? A good memoir is about lessons learned.
It is, and it's also a story or series of stories that tells a transformation. You're not going to come right out and say, here is my transformation, here is what I learned. But in showing versus telling, which is a common suggestion and catchphrase in the writing world, but it holds so true for memoir, because you're taking the reader inside your world, your experiences, your emotions. And memoir doesn't necessarily cover your whole life. That would be a biography or an autobiography. Memoir can be a week. It can be, you know, depending on how you tell it, it could be a day. But most likely it's a segmented period of time, and bringing the reader through a journey, your journey, your own unique journey that is told by only you and only the way you can tell it.
So finding your voice is one of the important things. And the epiphanies, tell us a little bit about the epiphanies that you highlighted in your memoir and how someone can use a writing prompt to get them started to access those memories?
Well, when you sit down and you decide you want to tell your story, and for me it was the 22 years, it wasn't 22 yet when I started writing, but we were about 17 or 18 into it. That's a huge memory bank, even if it's just a couple of decades of your life. And so you have to really reach deep and think about, first of all, what you want to tell and what the core message. And that's where I utilize the value of a mission statement. I worked in nonprofit for 15 years, and I've served on 6 boards over the last 25 years. And so I know the value, and I understand what a mission statement can do and why organizations use it. Well, it can be useful and in the author world. And anytime you start to write, you know, we all have anecdotes. We have our personal stories. We have our you had to be there moments, but they don't all deserve to be in the book. And you have to go back and think, does this pertain to the mission statement? And when you're thinking of the flow of your book, and, you know, let's face it, we do all face writer's block. Writer's block is real. And there's some days when the words flow, and there's some days when you stare at a computer, and then you need to get up and take a break and go for a walk. But a writing prompt can unlock stories. You know, you may answer a writing prompt or do some brainstorming, and it may not, the prompt may not be the actual story, but in answering the prompt, you can get to the story that you want to tell, because you're thinking back, and then one story leads to another, one memory unlocks another, and then you think, that's what I want. That's what I want to say, and that's how this will pertain to the overall theme and premise of my book.
What memoirs have inspired you and that you suggest people look at if they enjoy the genre overall?
Well, recently I enjoyed, I read it right when it came out, but it was Becoming by Michelle Obama, you know, especially being a political spouse, but on another level. So, but, you know, the thing that the commonalities are the same. I mean, you know, we both had families and young children and so forth. So you can see yourself in someone else's story. And that's the great thing about, you know, writing memoir, is that someone, your readers, will see themselves in your stories and become inspired and educated. I enjoyed Educated by Tara Westover. That was a look inside just a cult-like family based on religion and just other forms of abuse, and how this young woman broke out of that to educate herself and you know, become an author and more. I enjoyed Katie Ter's, I'm trying to remember the name now, but I enjoyed it. It'll come to me. I enjoyed that memoir because I like her. We got to meet Tony DeCopel at an event, ironically, at an Irish dance competition in 2016. He was not there to cover Irish dance. He was covering the Libertarian Convention. So our daughter was a fan, and Tony was so kind. And I've just enjoyed following them. So I enjoyed hers. So those are three that come to mind.
One of the things I love about Jimmy Fallon is that he reads these index cards with a thank you. And I think that being able to talk to people in your past and ask them, what was I like? Who was I then? How did you see me? What do you remember? Is that a good place to start as you're doing your own research on your memoir?
It can be. If you are unsure or you really want to introduce yourself to readers and you don't know how to do that, you know, if you're looking for a specific way and you're, you know, you want to, you know, if your parents are still around and you can ask them, I didn't talk about what I was like as a baby, you know, maybe there's one sentence in my book about it, but if my memoir focused more on that for whatever reason, then yes, I think that's a wonderful way to find that out. You know, asking a loved one. I had to talk to my aunt about some of the family history of my grandfather when he came to Florida after coming Italy to Massachusetts, then to Florida. And so I wanted to get the facts straight, obviously, and she helped confirm, you know, some of the details and clarify some of his jobs here in St. Pete, because he was a musician and played on WSUN. Why Stay Up North? That's what that stood for the history buffs who might be listening. But yes, I think it's great to ask people, you know, about yourself, if that lends itself to your particular story.
So you were at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Ecker College. OLLI is a fabulous program. A lot of people, 50 plus, the AARP audience, myself being one of them.
Me too.
Tell me a little bit about how that class transformed your students.
Each of the students came into it as in a different place. You know, some had written before, some, you know, were thinking about writing, some had ideas, and they, you know, the feedback I received from them was that it was educational to them because I covered the publishing paths that, you know, that some people don't know about, or there's definitely myths around self-publishing and myths around hybrid publishing. I talked about book marketing and demystifying some of what you think you need to do and using the internet to your advantage, or social media rather. So I think they appreciated also the conversational tone where they could read some of their work. And I wasn't there to provide feedback, but if they wanted to share with the group at large, they had the opportunity to do so. And I believe that in terms of a transformation, that it solidified that their stories had value and that they are worth telling and that they can write. Also, each of the people who did choose to share, vastly different styles of writing. And it was all wonderful to hear.
You know, I have signed up for your newsletter, and I encourage anyone who is just interested in reading and just engaging stories to subscribe to her newsletter at carriekreisman.com. KerryKreisman. I love when you say we all have a passion within. What lights you up? What lights you up?
There's a lot of things. My family, my work. I truly enjoy hopefully inspiring people. The surprising thing when I wrote my book was that it inspired people. I didn't expect that. I think I wanted to write it and tell the story, and then, you know, once you're done doing that, you just kind of sit back and take a deep breath and exhale. But I like inspiring the average person. And so I also enjoy, you know, it sounds cliche, but giving back. And we, you know, so many of us are so fortunate, but many of us are not. And we give back. We raise puppies for Southeastern Guide Dogs. One of our guide dogs didn't make it because of an injury. There are no failures. So she's a certified therapy dog, and we go to Tampa General once a week. And to be invited into someone's space when they are gravely ill, these aren't people who are, you know, having their ACL repaired. You know, they're a lot more serious conditions. And it's an honor to be in that space and, you know, give back just for an hour or two through my dog.
You've had so many dogs that you've been part of, and you do a lot of fundraising for Southeastern Guide Dogs. You've worked with Tampa General Hospital, Moms Demand Action, Ovarian Cancer Research Alliance. What dog, now the newest one, name?
Her name is Skye.
And this is number?
Number 14, and it's Skye, named for the Isle of Skye in Scotland. And then we also realized when we were looking up the meaning of the name that it has a Hebrew connotation of the heavens and the earth and those coming together from the word shamayim, fire and water, I believe, combining to form that word shamayim, which translates to sky.
So, fantastic. Well, I always like to talk to you at Hanukkah and Christmas because we talk about the dual celebrations,
yes.
Which is wonderful. So I think we're going to have, the online memoir class will start May 20th. Please go online, sign up for the newsletter, read the blogs. Carrie, are you going to indulge us with a bit of a read?
I would be happy to.
Thank you. From the accidental First Lady, Carrie Kreisman.
This is from Chapter 13, titled On the Job Training. When Rick became mayor, I didn't realize rappelling 28 stories down the Bank of America building in St. Pete would be one of the many events on his calendar. The invitation from Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Tampa Bay was a fundraiser for their programs. Rick showed up that afternoon, got a brief lesson in how to hold the rope and not bounce off the side of the building with his feet. The kids and I sat on the curb across the street and craned our necks toward the sky while he was coached by a professional on how to safely descend. Members of the media joked about wills and life insurance while I tried not to worry. I trusted the experienced professionals wouldn't let him fall. He looked confident from hundreds of feet away, but I wondered who thought this would be a good idea and why Rick didn't say no. In his defense, this was early in his first term, and requests were flying in faster than his new staff could handle. I don't think even Rick was fully apprised of what this adventure would entail. We cheered when his feet touched the ground, then toasted with a beer and fellow rappeller Terry Tomlin, the outdoors adventurer and husband of Rick's deputy mayor, Dr. Kanika Tomlin. If watching my husband rappel down the tallest building in the city didn't take my breath away, a dinner at the home of a four-star general might have. Rick sold me on accepting an invitation to dinner with General Lloyd Austin and his wife, Charlene. Rick had previously met General Austin. I hadn't met either the general or his wife. Austin, now U.S. Secretary of Defense, had been commander of CENTCOM at MacDill Air Force Base. When we arrived and saw cars lining both sides of the street, I wondered if we were at the wrong address. The invitation implied it was a dinner for us and the Austins. General and Mrs. Austin gave us a brief tour of their home before introducing us to a few couples on the way to the dining room with an oval table set for 20. Rick and I searched our names on the place cards. Mine was on one side of the table, and his was across from me and to the left. This was not what I envisioned when we agreed to attend this dinner. I'd exchanged no more than pleasantries with the general and his wife. Now I was seated between two men I'd never met. General Austin welcomed everyone, then gave a synopsis of his career and his goals during his tenure at MacDill. Before the courses began, he asked us all to introduce ourselves, moving counterclockwise around the table. I was relieved to be seated at the opposite end of the general, which meant that 12 speakers would go before me. Every one of them recited long and impressive resumes with colorful experiences to match. The guest on my right was a former ambassador who is a big GOP donor, and the guest on my left, a CEO with businesses throughout the world. Even the spouses of the uber-successful people at that dinner had lengthy resumes. I was a former stay-at-home mom who worked part-time for a local nonprofit organization. Each time someone finished speaking, my heart pounded. I tried to inconspicuously take deep breaths. I sipped water to quench my dry mouth, which felt like sandpaper. I rehearsed several versions of what I might say about myself, my background, or my job, that might be relevant to our hosts. Nothing I came up with could compare to the important things that everyone in that room had done. Then it came to me, like a name you remember only when it wakes you from a deep sleep. So far, no one in that room had mentioned working with veterans, an important segment of the military. I opened with my rare status as a St. Pete native, my service on the boards of organizations whose work benefited families and children, and my job as a public relations manager for a nonprofit that serves adults with disabilities. My heart still fluttered, but no one seemed to notice as I recounted how my work as a volunteer puppy raiser for Southeastern Guide Dogs changes lives. I described how some of the dogs that don't become guides help veterans who suffer from PTSD. I got to help someone I'd never met by loving and training a puppy for a year, then returning it to an organization for advanced skills training. I regretted not having business cards with me when a few of the guests asked for information about Southeastern. I vowed to be better prepared in the future. I left the Austins' home that evening, knowing that a long resume of accomplishments and accolades isn't proof of meaningful work. Practice doesn't always make perfect, but it made me more comfortable and ready for the next time I would find myself in a precarious situation.
That is Carrie Kreisman, not an accidental first lady, a fabulous first lady. Author, memoir coach. Thank you so much, Carrie, for being here.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you.